Hello, and welcome to Dern Discussions. We've got a great show for you today. Your favorite host, Dr. Brad Glick, speaks to Dr. Brent Moody of Tennessee Dermatology Society about changes made to evaluation and management codes, which Moody says were intended to de-emphasize procedural value and reward cognitive work. These changes were a part of the first major overhaul of the current procedural terminology code in 25 years. Let's go to their conversation now and hear about how these changes could help streamline billing documentation for dermatologists, as well as how they may affect coding for common clinical scenarios.
Welcome to Derm Discussions, a monthly podcast from HCP Live. I'm Dr. Brad Glick, and I am your host. Today's topic is E&M coding, the 2021 postscript, where will we be in 2022? Joining me today is Dr. Brent Moody. Dr. Moody is a board-certified dermatologist and Mohs surgeon in Nashville, Tennessee. His practice focuses on high-risk skin cancers, and about 15 years ago, he formed a high-risk skin cancer group in Nashville that is part of a multidisciplinary group practice focusing on specialized care for patients with aggressive skin cancers. Dr. Moody continues to contribute to our profession through his expertise in direct patient care, public policy, and reimbursement matters. So first off, Brent, thanks so much for joining us. And I also want to thank you for your many years of contribution serving on the RUC and many other AAD committees relating to billing and coding, and of course, advocacy for our specialty. So let's jump in and talk about E&M and related matters. 2021 brought us some new E&M approaches, new coding. I like to call it the year of the 1-4 and the 0-4. So tell us what happened in 2021, and is this going to stay this way? What does your crystal ball show you?
So thanks, Brad. It's great to be here. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about this matter, which has become increasingly important. So as you stated, there were changes in our E&M codes, both the values of the codes and what the requirements are to bill at a certain level. And they applied to the established patient visits and the new patient visits. As a quick sidebar, the consultation codes, which aren't used nearly as much since Medicare and many private insurers did away with them, are also undergoing revision through the RUC process. So I expect to see some changes in the value of those codes as well in the near future. What you said is essentially correct. There's increased value for the E&M services, and that was done as a desire to reward cognitive work, not just in dermatology, but across all specialties. It also made it a little bit easier, particularly for dermatologists, to bill at higher levels, because the old paradigm of counting bullets, you know, how much HPI did you do, how much review systems did you do, how comprehensive of an exam did you do, that went away, and it really boils down to medical decision making. So for some instances, it is easier to bill at higher levels, although as we learned at some areas, it's harder. So a full skin check, very common thing that all dermatologists would do, but particularly people like you in Florida, where you have a high burden of skin cancer, it's a little bit harder to bill at a higher level for a skin check. So what we're working through at the AAD side and other specialty societies as well is providing good guidance for our members on how to properly code for some of these common clinical scenarios. To your question, is it going to stay? The answer is yes, I think it's going to stay. I don't think there's any reason to think it's going to change. Again, it is rewarding cognitive work, which is one of the goals of CMS, is to de-emphasize procedural value and increase, again, that cognitive work that you would capture with an E&M. So I think it's here to stay. Yes.
So I have a question. These are higher levels of billing. There's going to be a higher level of reimbursement. I think that's great for dermatology. But What about, is this going to kind of raise, or perhaps I should say in opposite, lower the bar potentially for exposing us in our specialty of dermatology, but really throughout the House of Medicine to Medicare audits, because there's going to be a lot of higher level of billing, a lot more money is going to be paid out. So what is your perspective on that?
We're seeing a couple of early indicators of where this is going to go. So you're correct. So the amount of money that will be spent on E&M services will increase because the RVUs increased and so the dollars increase. And we're seeing various reactions. In the Medicare space, the issue is really what's going on with the conversion factor. So the amount of money in the Medicare world is a fixed bucket. So if you increase the amount of RVUs that get billed, the reaction is to decrease what each RVU is worth. So that's why we're seeing issues with falling conversion factor. We faced it in this year, the conversion factor fell a small amount, and it's scheduled to fall a small amount again next year. So going forward, I think we're going to be constantly challenged with decreasing conversion factor, and so decreasing payments for all services across the board. That's on the Medicare side. On the private payer side, we're seeing some interesting reactions. And I'm not gonna say which carriers are doing these things, but these are all matters that I've dealt with as the chairman of the AAD's Provider Relations Committee. We have one carrier, national carrier, who is simply assigning likely E&M levels to diagnoses. So they're basically saying, you know, we don't believe a certain diagnosis is worthy of a higher level billing. And so they're auditing those claims and making you prove that you really did meet the burden to bill at that higher level claim. So that's one thing we're seeing. And that's obviously a burden on practices because they have to appeal all these down codes. And I would encourage our listeners to look out for that. The claim won't be rejected out and out, which is an obvious problem. But let's say you billed at a level 4 and the insurance company decided, no, we're only going to pay you at a level 3. If whoever is putting in your payments doesn't recognize that, wait a minute, this payment looks a little bit too low. You may not realize that you've been downcoded because the EOBs don't always make it clear. So that's one thing I want people to know about and be aware of. The other thing we're seeing is carriers are starting to amend their contracts to go back to 2020 RVUs. So we've become aware of a dermatology practice that received a contract rider to a commercial carrier that said, hey, we're going back to 2020 RVUs, kind of take it or leave it. And the downside there is you won't get the benefit of the higher RVUs assigned to the E&M codes. So that's one of the other ways that carriers are reacting to this to try to, again, decrease the amount of money they're paying for this.
Well, how can they get away with that, though, if CMS has kind of stamped this as imprinted is the new way? How do they do that?
So you're right. And one thing that we as on the AAD side and other specialty societies, we've always tried to say, hey, look, CMS sets the standard. We can't have different rules for every different insurance company. It's too confusing. And CPT and CMS, they're the gold standard. We should all follow that one standard. So it is a problem when carriers start to deviate from what CMS wants to do. And the short answer is it's a private company and they can contract however they want for physicians. So it'll be up to physicians to push back and say, look, I'm not accepting this contract. Of course, if you're a small practice or don't have market leverage, that gets really hard to do. Back to your original question, which was about audits. I know we're seeing them on the private payer side. I haven't heard much about Medicare audits yet. Medicare tends to lag a little bit. So they're probably going to want to gather some data first. My suspicion is they're going to get a couple years worth of data and figure out who's an outlier on billing the new E&M services. And that will be how they're going to decide where to focus their attention.
So presuming you've done it all right, you follow the guidelines, and you get a Medicare audit, what is your advice? What approach should you take? And can the American Academy of Dermatology help? What is your perspective on this?
Sure. So the first answer is yes, the AAD can help. But I think that anyone who gets a real legitimate audit, and I'll explain that in a minute, should contact the AAD billing folks just for advice, because they've seen how this works. They've done it many times. They can help guide you in the process. You really have to decide what kind of audit is happening. There's a whole bunch of different kinds. It may just be a few what we call prepayment or post-payment reviews where they want to look at a couple of claims. Those are pretty common. You send in the records and you wait and see what happens. It either upholds the payment or they change the payment. If you disagree with them, there's a whole host of appeal rights that you have. So you just follow the guidelines that they give you. It should be clear what your rights are as the provider. Tips that something bigger may be going on is if they request a large number of records. If you get a request for 20, 30 or more records, that's an indication they might be doing a little bit deeper dive. Again, there's not much you can do about that other than send the records. Make sure they're complete. Do not alter records. You can make amendments to records as long as they're appropriately dated and signed. But then you just want to, you know, send the records in and then it's a waiting game. If you get something from what's called ZPIC, which is more of a program integrity audit, that's where they have reason to believe you've done something wrong. If you get notified you're being audited through the ZPIC program, you may want to talk to attorneys who are really expert in this just to make sure you're really taking that seriously. Because that's one of the higher levels of audits that you might get.
Very helpful. Kind of a last question, and it's going a little bit retro and speaking of audits, but specifically on a particular modifier, and that's the famous modifier 25. Where are we with modifier 25? Has that kind of gone away? Is it still being evaluated? I myself personally, for complete transparency, had a modifier 25 investigation, and it's a little bit of a pain in the butt, sorry to say, but nevertheless, just as you said about a Medicare audit, you send in your records. If the documentation is appropriate, you should do quite well. So where are we with modifier 25?
So to answer your question, no, modifier 25 is not going away. In fact, it's getting worse and worse. One of the things we've been dealing with on my committee, the Patient Access and Payer Relations Committee, is that many carriers are doing their own sort of ad hoc modifier 25 payment policies. They're decreasing your E&M when you use a 25, or they're decreasing the procedure when you use a 25. Or they're just refusing to pay for an E&M and a procedure on the same day, even if you appropriately use a 25. Those are big picture issues. If those are happening to people, we want to know about it on the AAD, because we work with state societies all the time and try to push back on these modifier 25 payment cuts. And we want to continue doing that. Sometimes we're successful, sometimes we're not. But we're here to help with that. With regards to a modifier 25 audit, it is a common audit target. And dermatologists are big users of modifier 25. And I think it's appropriate that we are big users of modifier 25. The simplest way to think about it is if you look at your note and you take a Sharpie and you you black out everything that has to do with the procedure that you performed that day. Do you still have a standalone E&M? Do you still have a standalone service? That's kind of a simple way to think about it. Common areas where I see people getting confused with 25 is they say, well, I'm going to do a biopsy, and I talk to the patient about all the possible things that this could be. And I talk to them about all the things we might do once we know the result. Well, that's all included in the biopsy code. So that's a common one. People say, well, I generated a big differential diagnosis. I talked to the patient about that. Well, you're already being paid for that with the biopsy. That's probably the number one area where I see modifier 25 issues is when people don't understand everything that's already in the procedure.
Yeah, I think from the perspective of the American Academy of Dermatology, when it comes to modifier 25 and even the audits that we just spent a few minutes discussing, I think it is Faith McNicholas, who is the reimbursement, coding reimbursement, government relations manager, who will be very, very helpful should someone need that information and that assistance in that setting. Well, Brett, I want to tell you, 20 plus minutes goes very quickly. This was great and very helpful information. As I talked to you previously, I want to bring you back in a month or so and see if any of this has changed. Hopefully it hasn't. It looks like 2022 should be a pretty good year for dermatology. But I do think that, as always, we're kind of under the gun and in the radar, if you will, when it comes to reimbursement and the optics of not only payers, like private payers you mentioned previously, but certainly CMS as well. So I thank you as always. I thank you for everything that you do for all of us in dermatology, and wish you a great holiday season and new year.
Thanks, Dr. Glick.
Thanks again to Dr. Moody for joining the program. And thank you for listening. If you like this episode of Derm Discussions and you want to hear more, follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Stay safe, stay healthy, and happy holidays.